Blog Talk Radio.
Beauty Shop for the Soul is a magnificent transformation to restore, cleanse, and tap into the essence of who you truly are. Beauty Shop for the Soul gives you the experience of a new makeover from inside out. Beauty Shop for the Soul was a universal gift to be birthed into the world to host Joanne Buckner. Joanne received this incredible gift through a meditation to share with others to awaken the soul. Beauty Shop for the Soul is a true magical process of the divine being you truly are. Now sit back, relax, and let Beauty Shop for the Soul take you on a new, exciting journey with host Joanne Buckner.
Welcome to Beauty Shop for the Soul. I'm so looking forward to your experience of this week. So you have a moment to call your friends and have them dial in 646-200-4169 and let's explore what happened to you as you explore those wonderful power centers in your body. We're going to talk a little bit more about that as it relates to some other incidents because, of course, considering all 12 of them, it relates to all of life in one way or the other. So, as you probably already know, I'm Joanne Buckner, the founder of Beauty Shop for the Soul. And as was just mentioned, this is a program of transformation that was given to me in a meditation. It has wonderful universal implications for anybody who would like to go beyond wherever you are. And, of course, I acknowledge that you may be in a very wonderful space and place at this time. But in the context of infinity, there's so much more available to you at your beck and call. All that's required is that you align yourself with the divine essence of truth, that you are able to identify yourself as this marvelous, magnificent spiritual being that you were created to be. Since there was only a marvelous, magnificent substance, that's the stuff from which you and I and we have been made. And then, of course, from the moment of birth, we seem to have forgotten who we are and whose we are. It doesn't change that fact. It is still the truth. So, having said all that, I wanted to take a moment, in fact, a few minutes, to honor one of our sheroes, as the term that she would use. The she I'm referring to is Maya Angelou, who made her transition this week. She went back home, meaning to the source from which she had come. And Maya was quite a talented woman. Of course, she was a writer, a poet, a singer, a dancer. She had been very active in the civil rights movement. I remember as an actress, she had a part in Roots many years ago, which was an explosive television series that in the nowadays they call it going viral. But that's what happened when Ellie Paley wrote Roots. And Maya, I had a sister named Mara, and her name is really close. So, but it's Maya Angelou. So we want to say rest in peace to Maya Angelou, but more than that, I want to share one of her writings that I think is so, all of them are appropriate, but this particular one is one of my favorites, and I don't know that I have a single favorite, but this one is called Still I Rise. For those of you who have not heard it, hold on, let me just take a sip of water here. Still I Rise by Maya Angelou. You may write me down in history with your bitter, twisted lies. You may trod me in the very dirt, but still, like dust, I'll rise. Does my sassiness upset you? Why are you beset with gloom? Because I walk like I've got oil wells pumping in my living room. just like moons and like suns, with the certainty of tides, just like hope springing high, till I'll rise. Do you want to see me broken, bowed head and lowered eyes, shoulders falling down like teardrops, weakened by my cries? Does my haughtiness offend you? Don't you take it awful hard, 'cause I laugh like I got gold mines digging in my own backyard. You may shoot me with your words. You may cut me with your eyes. You may kill me with your hatefulness, but still, like air, I'll rise. Does my sexiness upset you? Does it come as a surprise that I dance like I've got diamonds at the meeting of my thighs? Out of the husk of history's shame, I rise. Up from a past that's rooted in pain, I rise. I'm a black ocean, but leaping and wide, wailing and swelling, I bear the tide. Leaving behind nights of terror and fear, I rise. Into a daybreak that's wondrously clear, I rise. Bringing the gift that my ancestors gave, I am the dream and the hope of a slave. I rise, I rise, I rise. Rest in peace, my Angelou. But I want to talk to you about this for a moment because it's so appropriate for Beauty Shop for the Soul, because this is actually what it takes to transcend whatever circumstances, challenges, and events that are brought before us, whether it is physical, mental, emotional, financial. We are given always an option to rise. There was a time eons ago when the only considerations were fight or flight. Those were the days of the saber-toothed tiger. And when you were confronted, generally you would be the male in the in that time. They would either have to fight the tiger or run away. But we now know for many, many, many decades and longer that there is a third option, and it is transcendence. That's what Beauty Shop for the Soul is about. Whenever you elevate your level of consciousness beyond or above the level of the condition or circumstances, automatically, vibrationally, the condition dissolves, dissipates, and has disappeared. Because you have physically done anything, but because you have mentally risen in consciousness to the spiritual realm where all solutions abide. And so there are often things that we have, if you look at the first verse where it says, you may write me down in history, there's been much written in history about the African Americans. Some of them were true, but much of it was distorted. I can remember when I was a little girl seeing statues in people's yards that didn't look like anybody I had ever seen before, but they were statues that were not created by African-Americans, but they were created as a way of minimizing the value or the self-esteem, et cetera, of the African-American. But like Maya said, you can write me down in history with your bitter and twisted lies. You may trod me in the very dirt, but still like dust I'll rise. The Bible would say, judge not according to appearances. That means what other people think of you, and the same would be true for what you think of others. If the feelings that you have, the thoughts that you have for others or even for yourself, if it causes you pain, it's a lie. It's an illusion, because the only truth is, has alone, capital T-R-U-T-H. You're not talking true, as in today is Sunday and tomorrow is Monday, and so if we said tomorrow that it's Sunday, it would be untrue. No, we're talking universal truth, or in the scriptures it would say eternal verity. So often African-American women have been considered to be sassy. I've been one of them. And in her second verse, she says, does my sassiness upset you? Why are you beset with gloom? Because I walk like I've got oil wells pumping in my living room. Well, we can go back to the scriptures again, because there's a verse that says, assume a virtue you have not. Of course, in modern-day terms, they say, fake it till you make it. You know, if you pretend a thing long enough and have a certain degree of level of energy with the thing that you are constantly putting your focus of attention on, it is going to manifest. Abraham Hicks talks about manifesting in just a period of time as short as 17 seconds. That whatever we put our attention on for just a short period of time, now we're talking focused attention, unadulterated. You know, it doesn't take but a few seconds to say, I want to be a millionaire, but, and whatever comes after, but no one in my family has ever done it. I don't have any talent, and nobody will help me. All of these things negate the desire, and the word desire itself means of the Father. So 17 seconds of focused attention, according to Abraham, there's something that happens energetically. This is, you know, we are all radiating out by law of radiance an energy from us that is felt by anyone who is within that radius of the distance that we are radiating out. And so there's something magical, it seems. It's not really, but it appears to be just because we're not familiar with it. In a period of 17 seconds of, and Abraham says that the result of that combustion, because it has connected with whatever's vibrating at that same energy frequency, that there will be a manifestation that would be the equivalent of 200 hours of physical labor. 200 hours as a result of 17 seconds of focused attention. So what happens then if we go beyond the 17 seconds, say double that, and it's 34 seconds of focused attention again? There's another combustion that occurs in 17 seconds, in 34 seconds. So that now, with the 17 seconds and the 200 hours, with 34 seconds, it gets to be 10 times the 200. So then you have 2,000 hours, the equivalent of 2,000 hours of physical labor for that focused attention. Wonder what would happen if you can pick any aspect of your life, and we'll talk about it a little bit later, and just practice focused attention for 17 seconds, and then move into the 34 seconds and the 2,000 hours of manifestation. And they take you to the fourth time, the third segment of 17 seconds. 17 seconds is 51, a total of 51 seconds, less than a minute. And now you can multiply the 2,000 hours by 10 again. And we're talking physical man hours of labor. And then, of course, the last one that they talk about is, and according to Abraham, the manifestation is more than what you would be able to do in this life, in a lifetime. So what they suggest is that Esther does, that is, she's the one that Abraham expresses through, that don't start out with something that you have a strong attachment to. Instead, pick something that you're not attached to, because with some practice and some discipline, you will be able to focus on whatever it is that you want to focus on. But in the meantime, you would pick something that you do not have an attachment for, and focus on it. 17 seconds, 34 seconds, 51 seconds, 64 seconds. I would suggest that before you begin this, you put yourself in a relaxed state by breathing in slowly. So, and the soul feels a sense of relaxation through the energy of the breath, which is oxygenating the organs of the body. And so you're going to do three different experiments, because if with one experiment and it manifests, it's potentially something that you could think was just an accident. Three, according to their explanation, then it is less likely that you would think that it is or was an accident or just a coincidence or anything less than you actually manifesting according to, as the law says, every seed multiplying after its own kind. You will have sown the seed, cultivated the seed through the attention you give to it, and the manifestation of the harvest is there. So you would pick a second thing. Let it be different than the first thing. You're not going to repeat the second session by using the first experiment. So pick three different things. Do that, and then allow time to show you the results. According to Abraham Hicks, the very next day, they were in a different town that was unfamiliar, I believe they said, and Esther had selected blue glass as one of the things that she would focus on. And in going into a store that she had not been in before and into a second room, and there was a wall filled with blue glass, imagine. And so I won't go into the other two experiments. This is just for your information. This is how you can rise above the circumstances, whether it's been bitter or twisted or deliberate or accidental, or whether they really believe the lie, or even if it's you having that experience of judgment of somebody, someone, or maybe even yourself. It would still be no less than a lie for you to think that you are less than what you were created to be. And so just walk, just practice it, that upset people, because it suggests that this person is acting like, and they are initially, that they are something that they are not. Well, we are not less than what we were created to be. So when we are thinking along that vein, it's not the truth of us, but we are wanting to practice the presence until it's there. So, you know, light, when we're in the flow of light, everything is downstream. Going upstream takes more energy, more effort, and you get stronger muscles, but there's nothing upstream. Everything is downstream. And so Maya says, just like moons and like suns, with the certainty of tides, just like hope springing high, heal our lives. Well, the moon has to do with emotion and feeling. And, of course, the sun is solar. Tides are predictable. And it is predictable that not exactly what the outcome would be, but that you would have the highest and best. You can bank on that part. When you set an intention and practice the presence, it's a certainty that you're going to have manifestations that are in alignment with your highest good. And when you see that for someone else, the same thing. And, of course, people have, we have no authority to control other people's lives, but when we are seeing good and wanting good for others as much as we see and want good for ourselves, if it is rejected, the good just comes back to us like a boomerang. So when in Maya's poem, she's asking, do you want to see me broken? Well, maybe they do, but that's on them. It's not on you. You know, there's no need for you to walk with your head bowed and your eyes lowered. That suggests, And, of course, that was a method of survival at one time. Back during the days of slavery, the way that you enslaved a physical person was to first enslave the mind. And through horrible atrocities that even included things like castration, things like murder, and just many other things. That's not what this is about. It's for you to understand the bowed head and the lowered eyes in the context of what this poem is about was a way that people survived because anything that they did different than that at that time could be a lie. They were considered theft and many other things. So if you are feeling broken, you're not. Nothing missing, nothing broken, nothing left out. But the moment you recognize that you feel it, you can gently remind yourself to stand, to take a deep breath, first of all, because generally when we are feeling broken, we are holding our breath, we are tensing up, we are perspiring. There are a number of things biochemically that are going on in the body. So when you recognize these instead of allowing it to accumulate so that if these energies become congealed in the, and become issues in your tissues, you want to just take charge. You know, Myrtle Fillmore discovered in her flight, in her quest to restore health, that she had to let go of all false beliefs, illusions, that even she could not permit herself to gossip, which most of us indulge in at some time or another. So there are these signs that occur that you recognize. And the moment you recognize it, you began to, as Myrtle did, as she discovered that the only difference in animal and man, the life in animals and the life in man, the difference is the intelligence of man to direct the life that is flowing in them, through them, and around them. It is them, but we have the option to choose what and whom we will serve. So now, bowed head in different cultures, so I'm addressing the culture in which we live, but even in, meaning the Western Hemisphere, but even in this particular culture, at a young age, I can remember you would not look an adult in the eye if you were being disciplined or chastised. So I had the experience as I lived in a foreign country that in that particular culture, even adults, when they were interacting with elders, would have a bowed head. So if you're traveling to different places, you want to be mindful. But in general, a bowed head, it also has, you know, the shoulders slumped and couching forward a bit. It's a way of protecting the heart. So you want to, when you feel broken, remind yourself that nothing is broken, nothing is missing. It is an illusion. An illusion is like a shadow. When you turn on the light, and what we're talking about is the light of wisdom. We talked about wisdom last week when we talked about the power. There's actually a center in the body for wisdom. It is right beneath the solar plexus area, right beneath the rib cage. We can, as you are going through this transformational period, breathe in, relaxing the body, communicating with the body, and sending your focus of attention to that center for wisdom, which is also connected to the heart center, which is the center for love. And as you connect love and wisdom, there's a balance there between the two. They're literally, according to medical doctors, I happen to be from Indianapolis, and I have an article that was written by a doctor many years ago in Indianapolis who said that often when patients come that and they think that they have a heart condition, after examination it's discovered that it was not the heart, that in fact it was the abdominal area and vice versa. So in the 12 powers, for those of you who weren't on last week or maybe never have heard of them before, each of these power centers in the body, they're similar to the chakras, but there are more of them. Well, the one in the heart center represents love, and the one in the solar plexus area represents wisdom, and each one is connected to one of the 12 disciples. John represents love, and his brother James represents wisdom. And it is that relationship between brothers that shows the closeness between these centers in the body. So in each of the universe, you can activate and quicken the energy in the solar plexus by just breathing in and releasing. 3 to 5 of those breaths will begin to put your body in a state where you can think more clearly, because what happens the moment that you begin to feel separated, broken, something missing, et cetera, immediately the body gets a message that it's not safe in there. And when it's not safe, then the oxygen is not flowing freely to the brain, according to the scientists, nor the blood going to the heart. It's not the ideal time to make a decision. So you want to, when you're having this experience, to breathe in, to focus your attention on the center for wisdom and the center for love. There are other centers as well, which we've talked about before and we'll talk about again, but all you're wanting to do is bring yourself into alignment with the essence from which you were made, that true essence. And so when you're operating from there, there's no haughtiness. And someone being offended has nothing to do with you as much as their perception of themselves first and then of you. And as we move through this process of our own transformation, we're also able to see others according to the way that they were created and not according to the way that they have been presenting themselves. And so I won't go through the rest of this poem, but that's a good way to look at life. And in fact, you know that there is there's so much that we can use for guidance. There is I want to say Proverbs, but it is the scripture that says, whatsoever things are true, whatsoever things are lovely, whatsoever things are of good report, if there be any praise, if there be any virtue in these things, think on these things. In other words, you're not going to think on things that are not true. Someone saying something about you that you know is not true, why? Put your focus of attention on that. Whatsoever things are true. So if it's not true, let it reverberate back to where it came from. You don't have to, there are no victims in this plane at all. We have been wrongfully indoctrinated to believe, to think that we are, but we are not. So what things are lovely? If there are things that are lovely, if you're not seeing things that are lovely, either there's a distorted perception or you're in the wrong place. It would be your responsibility, even your obligation, to put yourself into a place of beauty, and there's a place in every town where there's beauty, and even if you have to go to your own mind, where you see a scenery. I used to live in a place where they had a rose garden, and I would go by this rose garden. It was spectacularly beautiful. Many different kinds and colors, and the fragrance was just wonderful. And so I would go by there as I would leave work, especially if it had been a challenging day. Yes, being in that garden was transformation. But then, in addition to being in the garden, if you were to smell the roses, when you smell the roses, then there's something that happens. Remember, we have sight, sound, taste, touch, and smell. But each senses has inner parts. It's more, it is beyond distortion. You know, the senses, sight can be distorted. You know, if you look at the railroad tracks in the distance, they look like they're running together, but they're not. They are measured and precise in the way that they're laid out. There are many other things that indicate that the outer sense can be distorted. The same thing with the hearing. And so as we begin to practice incorporating these senses, we can use these for the evolution in consciousness of every one of us. So as we begin to think about things that are lovely, if they are not before you, you either go where they are or you become still, as it says in Psalms 46:10, be still and know. Be still and know. So as you become still, then you can allow yourself to envision. And if you're not initially one that is a visual person, he can ask and he shall receive. So don't be thrown by the fact that somebody else is more creative, more artistic, has a greater imagination. You, each and every one, made in the image and likeness of the same divine substance, has a capacity unique, so don't expect that you're going to operate like anyone else, because you're not like anyone else. You are uniquely different, each and every one of us. So if there were two identical ones, that would mean that one would not be necessary. And you are, because you're here, by virtue of the fact that you are here, means that you are essential. There's something wonderful and marvelous about you. There's a purpose for which you've come, and only you can tap into that. But you have to know who you are in order to tap into your true essence, in order to be who you are, in order to go where you want, in order to do what you want, do and have and go, according to your own willingness to be, to do, and to have. And so I want to just share a love story with you. Some of you probably already know that I'm a storyteller, and, you know, storytelling was the first method of healing before there were doctors, and even with doctors. The stories that we tell ourselves about ourselves or about the doctor or about medicine or about anything. And the more serious the condition is, the greater the effect. And so storytelling has been a part of every single culture on the planet. It was also the first method of healing. It was the first method of teaching. It's the way that people were taught before there were schools, like people were healed before there were hospitals. But it was done through a conscious use and application of this divine mind, this essence that is in us. So the story that I want to share is a love story, not a man and woman, but it's a father and son. I was very touched by this story. It's actually a true story, but I'm going to just call the boy's name is Shane. That wasn't his name, but anyway, we'll call him that for purposes of this. Shane was born, had some congenital disabilities, and so he was in a special school, and the school had a fundraiser for the disabled kids, and the father took his, as he was actually walking to the school, I believe it was, he passed a park, and some kids were playing balls in the park, and his son was just excited, and he was playing ball, and that was something that he would like to do, and he asked his dad, do you think that they'll let me play? And the father, with some reluctance, said, well, we can try. In his mind, of course, he was thinking that his son's feelings would be hurt if he were not, or he went up to one of the kids on the field, the father did, and asked if it would be all right for his son to play ball. And so the kid that was on the field said, well, we're already behind in the game, and we're in the eighth inning, So we don't really have anything to lose. I guess it'll be all right for your son to play. And we'll give him a shirt, and we'll put him up to bat in the ninth inning. And so, happily, the father and the son took a seat in the bleachers. And the interesting thing that happened was now in this eighth inning, in the second half, there were some hits made, and so it ended up that the bases were loaded. So the ninth inning, when this young man now had a chance to play, the question was, would they, under these circumstances, because they were behind, and this would give them an opportunity to actually win the game should the runners on base be batted in. What do you think happened? Did they let him play? Add on his shirt. And he went up the bat. And the first ball he struck at was not a good pitch. And he swung at the ball and missed. And then a second time, the same thing happened. So no one in the crowd thought that this young man would be able actually to hit a ball. So everybody was, so the pitcher on the opposing team understood that the other team was wanting to make a contribution in this boy's life. So on this third pitch, he wound up and he just softly threw the pitch right over the plate, and the kid miraculously was able to hit a ground ball, but it went straight to the pitcher. Now, the pitcher could have taken that ball, thrown it to first base, and that would have been it. The game would have been over. But what do you think he did? The pitcher took that ball and threw it high in the air over the head of the first baseman and those that were in the field. And at that, everyone in the stands and the teams began to yell, run, 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 Shane. We're calling him Shane. Run to first base, Shane. And Shane had never run that distance before, but he was huffing and puffing and running toward first base as fast as he could. And he finally makes it to first base. And now they're saying, Shane, run to second. And Shane is running. He's breathless. He's huffing. But he's still running. And so now the first baseman who has the ball understood what the pitcher and the other team is doing, and he too throws the ball high in the air above the head of the second baseman. And Shane is just running and running breathlessly trying to make it. And now the crowd is cheering. Everyone is on their feet, and they're all, run, Shane, run, Shane, run to third. Run to third, and so Shane actually made it home. He rounded the bases first, and then he made it home. He scored the winning run. And how wonderful that this child was given this blessing of love. It is a demonstration of unconditional love from these kids on both teams and from everybody. There was no thought of the game being won or lost by any team. The game here was really the game of life that they were playing with this child who otherwise would not have had an opportunity. Well, the father was later given an opportunity to be the speaker at a school, and he shared this wonderful story. Was Shane relived that moment many times last summer. But he never saw another summer because during the winter he passed away. But he had been made a very happy child, and it was through tear-streamed eyes that the father shared the story of his son, a story of love. It wasn't just the love of a father for the son. It was just a love of humanity, a demonstration by young kids. So what are you teaching your children? I remember when I was in elementary school, they had special ed classes, and I'm happy to say no one had actually told me, but I never participated in the name calling that some of the students would apply to the children that were in the special ed class. They weren't curse words, but they just weren't nice words. And so they would make reference, and I'm sure that the students probably could hear this. So as we began grooming our children, actually, the earlier, the better, so that we are coming from a place of love and teaching our children to come from a place of love as well, so that when we are approached by somebody who doesn't know who we are, who doesn't who we are, who doesn't understand who we are, that's not on us. It's on the one, it's on the thinker that's having the thought. And so as we move on into the last few minutes of this program today, I want to just again say rest in peace to my annual. But I want to continue talking about love. Love is, wow. You know, there are different kinds of love, but the love that we speak of here is unconditional love. Didn't go the way that I wanted at a time. Of course, years and years ago, not recently, but I have to acknowledge, done that. Or even when I think about it as a parent, the times that perhaps, although I didn't call myself withholding love, but I did withhold attention, I'm sure, so in the final analysis, it's probably the same. But Unity Worldwide, which is the organization co-founded by Myrtle and Charles Fillmore. Myrtle Fillmore is the one that I talked of a while ago who was healed. And one of the things that she did was when she discovered that she could direct the energy in her body through the intelligence that's also in her body, she began to speak to the tissues and cells in her body from head to toe, every one of them. Initially, she just apologized. That would be like a confession. She apologized for having thought that her liver was flourish or inert or anything that medically had been told to her by the doctors, not against doctors, but just recognizing that there's a presence and power in the universe that's greater than anything or anyone and beyond description, and it is available to us. So as Myrtle discovered this, she began to talk to her body. Every day she went apart from the rest of her family and sat quietly in a room and talking to the body, using what she considered to be the Word of God, which also it did. The doctors had said that Myrtle would not live more than 40 years beyond the time that they had said that she would live. 40 years. But and, of course, because others had known of her predicament, that she had multiple disabilities going, so that she said that she and her husband were often in pain. They were just a sickly bunch, so she said. But once they were healed, first her and then her husband, who at first considered himself to be scientific, and as a scientific person, he wasn't into this kind of spiritual realm that his wife was operating in until he saw the result, the harvest that had occurred as a result of the work, the inner work that she began to apply these principles. He had one leg shorter than the other, and it caused, I think that I read, it was, he had to wear an elevated shoe that was a couple of inches added to it. It was from an accident that occurred when he was a young kid, and it left him with just one leg shorter than the other. But he began applying this technique, and he, as well, had a healing. He, meaning Charles Fillmore, husband of Myrtle, co-founder of Unity Worldwide. And so they began teaching these very principles that we're talking about here. And it was the 12 powers that was given to him, the 12 powers of man based upon centers in the body and the 12 disciples, that each one representing a color, representing a specific place in the body, representing a particular personality trait. The book is called The 12 Powers of Man, for the esophagus of man. If you want to pick that up at some point and begin to practice the presence in that way. There are meditations that we can do on these energy centers. And in fact, I want to just take a few minutes of this time before we come to a close. I think it appropriate that we center for love and the center for wisdom. They're connected. There are ganglionic nerves behind the heart. There's a ganglionic set of ganglionic nerves behind the solar plexus, and they are connected. They have a symbiotic relationship. They feed off of each other. And so I'm going to invite you to sit back, and in the process of sitting back, if you just kind of lean forward a bit, and as you lean forward, scoot your hips toward the back of the seat, or if you're on the floor, toward the wall. And then as you do that, then when you bring your shoulders up, your back is more erect. It's as if there was a string from the top of your head, so that now the spine is erect and the energy of the kundalini can flow more freely from the base of your spine, up the spine, and ultimately just out through the crown of your head. We invite you to take a slow, cleansing breath. With your mouth closed, you're going to breathe in and exhale slowly, slowly. And when you think that you've exhaled all, pull your tummy in some more. Exhaling more. And let's now take a second breath. Breathe in slowly from the base of your abdominal area. Breathe in and let this energy flow upward, moving right up the center of your body through each of those energy centers. You don't have to know what they are. Just notice what your body feels like as you go through this experience. Bringing the energy up, up, up through the neck, the head. And imagine that soft spot right at the crown of your head. They called it a mole when you were born, when we were born. And feel this energy now as it just moves out into the hemisphere, into the atmosphere, and release. Slowly, just let go. Slowly. Pulling your tummy in more and relax and relax. And we're going to do one more breath. Breathe in from the base of the abdominal area. Up slowly. Feel it as it moves into the chest breath area. Right up through the throat power is at the base of the tongue. Right up through the center of your head, beyond the place for imagination, upward through the center for space, right up through that crown of consciousness, and hold, and now slowly begin to release, release. And as it starts, my body is relaxing. My body is relaxing. My body is relaxed. Relax. Relax. And so now I invite you, because remember, it was the Christ, Jesus the Christ, that recruited, that cultivated them. they were in a state, as we all are in the beginning, a state that was not evolved, and it was through the teaching. What he said to Peter and Andrew, the first two, was, I'll make you fishers of men. And so as he began to teach these principles to them, they became quickened in spirit, in their minds, in their hearts, and in all these energy centers in the body, presumably. And that's what I'm inviting you to do. Put your focus of attention right on the crown of your head. And actually, if you were to take the palm of your hand, keep your eyes closed, and hold it about an inch above the crown of your head, you're likely to feel the energy above your head. Go on. See if you can feel that energy, and if not, be not dismayed. It will happen as you continue to pursue this, allowing yourself to become still. So breathe in right into that crown of the head. That is the Christ consciousness. And now we are going to bring that energy down slowly through the head, the throat, into the chest cavity, right into the heart center. Breathe in. Breathe in slowly. And what is the trait for the heart center? This is an easy one. It's love. Love, the love that is in us, is already in you. I call it your divine natural ability. So the DNA scientifically can trace your genealogy, but spiritually speaking, your divine natural ability is traceable back to the source of all creation. And it is the ability to harmonize, to unify yourself with all of creation. When we do that, we call it love. So put your center of attention in the heart area, the center for love, and just breathe in. And have this thought. My heart is filled with divine love. My soul is filled with divine love. I radiate divine love to all whom I meet and greet and all whom I come in contact with. And divine love is reflected back to me. Divine love in me, through me, around me, as me, is me, and now manifests itself in all of my affairs and all of my activities. Ernest Holmes, the founder of Religious Science, says, ultimately, there is no thing to heal ever. There is no thing to heal. It's only love to reveal. It is a revelation of love that will heal us of our lives, heal our relationships, heal our health condition, heal our finances. Love is all there is. Love and God are coexistent and co-eternal. So wherever God is, love is, and where love is, God is. They're inseparable. So right now, where you are, love is in its entirety, in its totality. And so just briefly, we're going to bring your attention, let it drop down from the heart center. You know where that little, what is this, we call it, you know where your the floating ribs are, that center there, where it kind of comes up like a V shape, that's the solar plexus area there. And that's the center for wisdom. It's important that, you know, we're always making decisions. And sometimes without being aware of it, we end up, if it's been a challenge to make decisions, and we wonder whether it was done with wisdom or Have we been judging, discerning, evaluating just exactly what have we been doing, whether it's for ourselves or someone else? Wisdom without love is kind of foolish in many cases. I want to turn that around. I want to say love without wisdom is kind of foolish. You've probably made that assessment when you see someone who you think has allowed other people to just run stampede over them. Well, the other side of that is wisdom without love is hard-heartedness. So if you've been accused of being hard, you might want to look at how loving. By loving, I want to say how much you're expressing, experiencing, demonstrating love. Unconditional love. So if you've heard it enough, or even as you look at yourself, if you're uncomfortable all the time, you're probably not loving yourself enough. So you want to allow your attention to drop from your heart center down to the center for wisdom. And just know that there's a connect between love and wisdom. And as you put your focus of attention there, it will quicken, especially by your conscious direction of the energy from the crown of your head through the Christ consciousness into the heart center, into the center for wisdom. Just breathe it in and just release and let go. So I invite you to take another breath, breathe in, and allow this energy to flow gently right into the center for wisdom, passing through the center of love, and remaining connected. There's simply not a spot where love is not. All the aspects of God are wherever God is, and where you are, God is in its entirety, in its totality. So breathe in. Practice this during the week, putting your focus of attention on wisdom, center, and the center. I will look to hear from you next week. Have a wonderful, blessed week.
Thank you for listening to the Judy Show.